Welcome to Farming Aotearoa with agricultural journalist Peter Burke.
Hi folks, and welcome to another edition of Farming Aotearoa for 2025, sponsored by Rural News, the newspaper that gets the top stories to farmers every week. And once again, agricultural journalist Peter Burke, who works for Rural News, is with me in the studio to bring us up to date on what's been happening in the past month. So I gather, is this with Rural News that you've been out and about on the road?
Actually, some of it, but a lot of it with Ahi Whenua. So I do two jobs. So I'm one of these, you know, silly old men that that do two lots of work at the same time. But I work full-time for Rural News and part-time for the Ahi Whenua Trust, which runs the top Māori Farmer of the Year and the top young Māori Farmer of the Year. So I've been on the road for them, basically, but with some Rural News work tucked away in the background as well.
Okay. But both. You've done around about 3,000 kilometres or something.
3,000 k's in 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Goodness, what do you think? You're living in Australia or something with that
amount of
k's? I know.
Well, Australia's like they're nothing of that. The difference between Australia is here is you can drive for 5 hours and never see a dunny. But, you know, in New Zealand, you'll see a BP service station or whatever it might be all along the way. But, no, it's good. So I drove up to Whangarei and then onto this farm, which is at Whangaruru, which is about an hour's drive out of Whangarei. So, and then drove back, and I think it was 11 hours from Whangarei back to home straight.
Gee.
In the rain.
In the rain.
It was okay. I mean, I'm quite used to driving like that. And then out to Mahia, and I'll talk about that later on. So out to Mahia Peninsula in northern Hawke's Bay to another Māori farm, a beautiful farm, where Rocket Lab launched their rockets from. So there we are.
Yes, I remember seeing that in the news.
Yeah, so that's going to be a talking point later on in the show today. So we'll talk about Rocket Lab and some nice stories about it too. It's a great farm and a brilliant time there. So I've had a good couple of good days. I'm actually, I won't say the word that Peter Jones said once on here, but you know what I mean by that. I'm not exactly healthy sometimes. Tired me out a bit.
You're going to talk about the drought first, are you?
Yes, I am. The drought is something, it's interesting, because there is a perception sometimes that once the rain has fallen, the drought is over.
Mm.
Well, that's not true.
It's easy to come to that conclusion,
I mean, the lamestream media, as I call them, once they see the rain, they think, oh, it's fine, the farmers are okay, then we'll get back to
people. We'll just move on.
They'll move on to the next shallow story that they write about. But that's not the case. So what I want to talk about today is some of the effects of that. And in particular, we've got some areas around the country where it's been particularly bad for dairying, like Northland, the Waikato, Taranaki, and parts of the Manawa too. And if you look at it, Taranaki and the Waikato are very, very big milk-producing areas. And they've been hit. I was up in Northland, and I'll talk about Northland in a minute. In fact, I'll talk about it now if you like. I was there the day the rain started to rain in Northland, and that was quite interesting to see Northland. I haven't been up there for a long time, and I went out to this dairy farm out from Whangarei at Dargaville, and looking around there, you could see there was green there, but what it is, it's kakuia grass, so it just sits there. There's not much feed there, and it was quite sobering to see what some of these farmers are having to deal with in this situation. They are having to buy extra supplements, in other words, supplements by meaning extra feed, be it maize silage or maize or whatever it might be. Some have had to dry off their cows early, and that's an issue which we'll talk about in half a minute when it comes to contract milkers in particular. So while we've had rain, it's good, but the drought's not over in terms of the implications. They could be felt for another year probably, potentially in this area. The farmers up there told me that they expect to get drought, as they expect to get heavy rains like we've had cyclones there. That's not unexpected. You're living in a subtropical climate, so therefore you'll get that sort of situation. You'll get drought, you'll get the rains. But for a while there, the rain was actually quite good rain. It was soft rain, as the Irish would call it. That means it rains every day in Ireland, except on, I don't know, St. Patrick's Day maybe, I don't know. but anyway, whatever it might be. But it was soft rain, therefore it was going to actually be effective, because you don't want rain to come in and just sort of wash over the soil. You want it to actually seep down into it and restore the moisture to the soil.
And not wash away all the good stuff.
Not wash away the soil, no. Mm. And it was great to see one of the farmers I talked to, how he had managed his way through it. He was telling me at the time, if it hadn't rained that day, and he was he was pleased. He said, well, my dams where I get my water from are starting to get very shallow. They're getting muddy now. We're struggling. I know other farmers in the area were having to truck in water, so they couldn't. They didn't have enough water on their in their dams to feed their stock. So they're having to get big tankers to come in and provide water for their stock, which is an animal health issue as much as it's not about milking the cows. It's simply about making sure they can drink. And they drink a lot of cattle drink a lot of water.
Yeah.
They're quite thirsty creatures, so you've got to provide that, and particularly with the heat up there. So that was great to see Northland in that sense and see the drought broken there, and that was good news. But we've got a problem further south, particularly around Taranaki. And while we've been seeing these, you know, big storms coming through the North Island and right through, one would have thought the Taranaki, which, and it's the coastal area I'm talking about, so it's the Opanakis, the Hauras, the Pihamas, Waverleys, right down to Whanganui itself. And they're the areas that haven't had rain much. What is interesting, and I guess it's a bit about New Zealand's geography that tells us something about it, that our weather patterns are dictated by our mountains. We're a mountainous country, and therefore the weather gets deflected by the mountains. And in Taranaki, for example, the rain has been mainly coming from the north and the west. And what happens is, they tell me, is it hits the mountain and it's sort of hits inland. It goes inland. It doesn't go out to the coast. So if you're in, say, around Inglewood or Stratford, you're doing okay, thank you very much. But that rain is not being sent out to the coastal areas, which are badly affected. And it's almost a region of two halves in terms of production. Out on the coast, it's very bad. And while, say, around Inglewood, they might have had 200 mils, they might have had 30 or 20 out on the coast. So it's quite a different situation. But the big news at the moment, really, around dairy is the effect the drought is having on people like contract milkers. Now, you've got your dairy farmer who, you know, has a system, they own the farm, they've got assets and that sort of thing. The contract milker simply milks the cows, so their income is entirely dependent on the amount of milk they get. What's happened is, in many of these regions, and Taranaki is a good example, but also in the Waikato and Northland, is the cows have had to be dried off early. In other words, hungry cows can't be fed. Unless they've got grass, they can't produce milk. So you just dry them off and say, right, we'll try and feed you up enough to keep you in good condition so you can calve in spring. Those farmers who are contract milkers don't get paid in that period of time. So they might be 4 months without an income. Mm. So from, say, mid-March to maybe early August, potentially, or September, they will not have any cash. Their cash flow is almost zilch. So what's happening at the moment is there's a big move in Taranaki by the Farm Owners Association group there, to try and get farm owners to be a bit kind to their contract milkers and say, look, if we don't have you, you're important to us. Maybe we can help you a little bit, give you some payments, extra payments, just to get you through to pay your staff, maybe to pay for the petrol that goes in the farm bikes or the diesel that goes in the tractor, and try and keep them going financially in some way for the next 4 months. The other side of that is that the farm owners want the contract milkers to say, here's my plan, this is what I will do, and, you know, by way of reciprocal to you, I will do this, this, and this, and this. So you've got it now, trying to get the two sides sitting down, having a cup of coffee, in what is potentially a tense situation, to sort out how can they get through the next few months in some sort of order, if you like. And that is, to me, quite an important issue. Some farms will be back in business quickly and others will not be. And it's almost a case of, you know, one farm here, one farm there. I know in my own case, I live up near the hills north of Otaki, and I get rain at my farm, but 2 km down the road, they may not get any. So that just tells you how mischievous the rain patterns are in New Zealand in that sense, that they don't... You can never be certain of what's going to happen. So that's one of the big things. So what I'm hearing now is that the banks are behind, looking around, helping out as much as they can do, and trying to make sure that that everything sort of gets done. The other problem for Taranaki, the coastal Taranaki, is that with the dry, they also had an infestation of grass grub, which is a problem too. And what that means is, of course, that the grass grubs simply eat the roots of the pasture, and you see these bare patches emerging. So it's not all drought, it's also some of it's caused by the grass grub. So what they've now got to try and do is to resow those pastures. I'm told that there is just enough moisture there to probably get some grass seed down and get it going. but they will need a lot of rain. Now, traditionally, farmers don't really want a wet winter, but they actually need it.
Yeah.
Because both in Northland and Taranaki, the other two areas I can talk specifically about, the water tables, the soil moisture levels are horrible. They're low. The aquifers are low, need to be recharged. So you've got, I know in Northland they were having to re-bore, put down new bores simply to get water. The existing bore was not deep enough to get it. And that will be an issue for some that others will not like, but we are in that situation. The other positive side is that the soil temperatures are quite high. I mean, I can gauge farm by looking at my own lawn. It's becoming a pain now because it's getting... Obviously, there's quite a bit of rain, but there's also the soil's quite warm, and therefore the grass is growing. So
I've noticed that myself. I've had to mow the lawn, and I've
quite a lot. I'm having to do it every week now. It's a nuisance. But that's what it is. So you've got a horrible situation for soil moisture. For soil moisture, but a good situation and that means there may be some balancing out, and it may I guess it'll be a case of just watching to see what will happen in that area. So we've got some interesting things to watch on drought. That'll be a big issue for us going forward anyway, particularly.
Yeah, so I have to watch and see what happens with the weather patterns going forward.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting a lot more rain now, and I think it's the main thing is it's just not falling in the areas that one would have liked it to have fallen, you know. So that's the issue that we've got to look and see. Hopefully it will fall around coastal Taranaki particularly. Northland, I think, is not too bad. I asked them, fed farmers up there the other day about the floods. Well, we get floods up here all the time. There's nothing unusual out of this. So, yes, it's flooding, but it hasn't caused any major disruption, put it that way.
Okay.
So that's that one.
Okay. So you've got some good news for sheep farmers.
Yes, I have. The government have told the public servants that the time has come to stop using synthetic carpets in offices.
Oh.
Wool.
This is great.
It's wonderful news. It's not a silver bullet, but at least it's. I think it's a very. I've got to take a hand off to Mark Patterson, who is the New Zealand first minister. He's the minister we call the Minister of Wool, but he's Associate Minister of Agriculture, and he's a very passionate about wool. He's a sheep farmer in his own right. He's really pushed this. He said to me the other week that back 10 years ago I was pushing this to happen. So we are going to see some wool being, or at least the government agencies being required to use wool and give a darn good reason why you're not.
Yeah.
In the past, they've used synthetics. And I think some of these people have grown up not understanding what the fine properties of wool. It is a fire retardant for a start. It's great for acoustics. You can use it. Well, I've got a wool pillow that someone made once and gave to me. It's a lovely fibre, and
it's great if you spill things on it. Red
grape juice on it, yes, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Great to clean up on because it's natural.
But I'm just a bit intrigued about this, and this is being a bit naughty to farmers here. But the reason we've got this situation here is because some pretty dopey farmers, and I don't apologise if they're listening to me and they think they're one of them. Yes, you were dopey. Who actually voted down the wool levy in 2005. There was a levy for wool, and back in my early days as an agricultural journalist, wool was a very well-promoted, well-supported fibre. But farmers voted to get rid of the wool levy, and therefore, and then they grizzle because they're not doing anything. Well, you caused it, mate. Don't blame the government for this one. You made a decision. They also abolished the wool board, which I think was a mistake, but then others will say I'm wrong. I'll stick by my guns and say we had a very good system, and everything that was old was not bad. So this is a situation where farmers have, to some degree, got themselves to blame for the wool being in the state that it is now, because they walked away from supporting the entities that were doing good work. And I've been overseas in my early days, seeing what New Zealand wool was doing in all parts of Europe, in Eastern Europe as well, actually, as it turns out. And I just think, oh, God, What are these dopey idiots we're doing,
We've got to get back to the mindset where we want quality over quantity, or we want...
Yeah.
I know it's going to be more expensive, but it's going to last you longer. It's a better product, better for everything, better for the environment. But it's... Yeah. This whole cheap throwaway society has to stop.
It does. I mean, at the moment, what you've got is you've got sheep being... A big push to get sheep that are self-shedding, which is almost a tongue twister in a way. I don't think I could say that quickly. But you've got Wiltshire sheep being something that are being popularised now because they shed their fleece.
Wiltshire
sheep.
It's kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Because Wiltshire is a blade.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, well, so is that why they called it?
I don't know. But anyway, blade, you don't need a blade for it. Although I've had them on my property too. I know what they're like. I don't have them now. And that's not to say they're bad. I'm just saying that everyone has their own view of them. There was a lot of work being done by Massey on those sheep, just try and find to breed that flock up and to get more of them around. And for some, they will suit because it means at the moment shearing is expensive, it's hard to get, and the wool price is terrible.
Do we still have people who can do that as a job?
Well, it's becoming, that's an interesting question. You know, I mean, you think about it, back in the 70s, we had 70 million sheep. We've got about 30-odd now, probably, so we've halved the number. Interesting enough, we still produce roughly the same amount of lamb to sell as we did back with all those sheep because the genetics have been improved, so we've got more twins, we had triplets, we did lots of things that were good. But wool was popular, especially even coarse wool, which is essentially, they say carpet, but it's not only carpet, it's for other things as well. It can be used in upholstery, it can be used in pillows, it can be used acoustically. It can be used in air filters, for example, as well. So there's just not one use for it. It's just not carpet, which is people have got a mindset that wool is about carpet. Well, it's not only. Look, go on Goop. Ms. Google will tell you some good answers if you want to look at it.
There's a lot of use for wool.
A lot of use
for wool. Keeps you warm, I can tell you. Blankets. I've got the most beautiful wool blanket that just outdoes any other synthetic.
Yeah. The other thing, I do notice myself, even with jerseys, the moths get into the wool jersey, they do it over badly. You can't buy mothballs these days that I can find anyway. But anyway, that's another story. But I'm a great fan of
it. Well, at least it breaks down.
Yeah. And I think that's a great thing about it, that it is that you can actually, it is biodegradable in that sense. If you put wool does break down, whereas synthetic doesn't break down. So it's all those good things. And I can't quite work out why a certain party which claims to be green doesn't sort of promote wool as being something important as opposed to promoting some of the other social issues. Because it is after all, a natural fibre. It's got all the qualities that you want. It's green in every way. I mean, white is green.
White is green. I don't know. Maybe it's got something to do with CO2, but that's...
Anyway, yeah.
They're not cows, you know.
But sheep are lovely, and I think...
They are lovely.
They're not exactly dumb either.
No, they're not. I have sheep next to me, and I really like them. I don't like it when they move to another paddock and I can't see them.
No, I think...
They like music as well, apparently.
Do they?
I played some songs just by accident out that had the doors open.
Can they sing?
No, they weren't singing or dancing, but there were some songs they didn't like, and the ones they did, they came back.
Well, you should get a CD composed with music for sheep, and they can bring.
I think I should.
All the people in Kelvin will come up and live on the coast and buy the music at a farm. You can give them a CD with every farm they buy. Anyway,
there you go.
All right.
Oh, there's a and then comes dream for me. Okay, so you're going to talk to me now about some changes to the RMI.
Rigs. Yeah. So one of the big pledges of the coalition government was to deregulate or to cut regulation to the minimum, cut red tape, cut Wellington out of farming was one of the cries that they had. The theory was that Wellington had too much say on what went on farms. The complaint was that some of the people in Wellington who were making regulations never went outside Johnsonville and therefore didn't know what happened outside on the farms. And we were getting regulations which were, I suppose I could call them very European. If you look at a bureaucracy, the European Union, with all the good things it does, and it does some great things, it's a bit of a bureaucracy. And we ended up with a lot of regulations which were quite prescriptive, legalistic, and they might have got you an A in a university essay, but they probably didn't work very well on a farm, and they've got to be. So what we're seeing now is some reforms of the RMA, and we're seeing generally supportive noises coming out of Federated Farmers and all the other agencies, still saying, yes, we think it's great, but we want to know the detail of these things. We're not just going to take you... But we want to see a bit more of it. We have seen one in the last few days where the government announced that they're going to make freshwater plans, which farmers have to do, much more simple, practical and affordable. Up till now, they've been quite complicated, quite prescriptive, and this change is coming. And this is starting to get the Fed farmers and Dairy NZ and others saying, great, we want this. This is what we need to do, because regulation is a big thing, and it's also time-consuming. And what you are getting in some cases is duplication of having to put things in. And sometimes that's not easy, because just to change the subject briefly, to go back to Northland for a moment, talking to one of the Federated Farmers guys there, Wellington says you must fill in these forms online, which is lovely. You can do that in Johnsonville. Probably. But there aren't many dairy cows in Johnsonville, I hate to say it.
Not anymore, no.
No. But what they're saying to me is, if they've got a computer on their farm, they may not be able to say that internet is so unstable, they cannot fill that form in on their farm. They have to go into town, which might be an hour's drive, to get into a place where they can sit down and actually get on their laptop and fill out the forms they're required to. And I think this is the big thing, that these things are nice, but if you've got to do that three times, I mean, you could spend half your week as a farmer going into town to fill out forms.
Is this because they don't have access to
Wi-Fi
of the internet?
The internet's just not good enough.
Yeah.
And it's unstable.
Because they're out rurally.
This one of the guys I spoke to, he lives under the shadow of a cell phone tower. The internet for him is still unstable, he said.
Right.
So what I'm hearing, and it's the same for health if you look at that area too, like in Northland, for example, it's so bad that what they're doing now is making a conscious effort to put Starlink or things like that into Morais, so that people can go to Morais and do their telehealth calls from there, rather than try and do it from home, because they can't do it.
Yeah.
Oh, they don't know how to do it, potentially. Yeah. They may have a computer, but also the chances are they don't have good, stable internet. So that's a big issue. I think and it's something that I feel successive governments have never really understood at all, but that's just my own biased view of life. So anyway.
Yeah, so they haven't really thought that through so much, have they?
No, they haven't really. So, but my big story this week is something that I'm very passionate about, and one of the privileges of the job that I'm in now is to work for the Ahu Whenua Trust, which runs the competition for the top Māori sheep and beef farm. Next year it'll be horticulture, the following year back to dairy again. But I was very fortunate to go to two of the field days. So what they do in the competition, people enter it, the first round of judges selects a number of finalists, two or three. This year they've selected two. And then those two farms then have to have field days. In other words, they open their farm up for visitors to come along and see what they're doing. They explain everything. The judges are also there, by the way, too, to talk to them about it. And then they generally do a farm tour, so you hop on bikes and whatever it is and go around and see things. So the first one up in Northland was at the at Whangaroa, it was a little place called Whangaruru, which is about 70 k's from Whangarei. So you can see my journey was some Otaki up to Whangaruru.
This is where the k's are coming in.
This is where the k's are coming in. And it was beautiful, except that on the day we got to Whangaruru, it rained.
Bucketed down.
It did. The idea was it was going to be a farm tour. They had all the utes lined up. We were going to drive around the farm tracks. We started off. We got about, I guess, at the most, a quarter of the way around something. The tracks turned to porridge.
Oh, dear.
And there was quite a problem for a while there, because we had to get people out from where they got to.
Right.
Not easy on those tracks. They were quite dangerous, in fact. So you had to back down hills and finally get out, which they did. But it took them about an hour to get people out from the tracks and back to the Marae, to where they then revamped the whole thing and did the presentations. But to be fair, it wasn't a farm. If we were a bit lucky in the sense that you would have seen some things, but you wouldn't have missed too much by not being on that thing. It would have been lovely to go over. It's a beautiful area. You could see the coast in there. Mm. It's right on the coast. It's lovely, beautiful climate. But the people, the story is quite amazing, and the people, the whānau who are part of that trust, they've had a real struggle to get their land back. It's taken them years and years and years, and finally they got it back about 4 or 5 years ago, and they're so proud of that land, and they're so emotional about it. I mean, the people were crying when they were giving their presentations.
They had a local group,
and they you could just see the tears flowing as they were doing their pieces for us. So that was a privilege to go and see those people. It was run by a guy called Morris Peter, and he's one of the co-chairs, but he's really a smart man. And done a lot to get that thing. It's a bull. They call bull finishing. So they bring in bulls and then they fatten them up and sell them. And they're doing a magnificent job. And they're a very, very worthy finalist. And I also think that the people who were there from Ngaitonga Trust were very, very proud people, very passionate about their land. And that was a very wonderful experience for me. And it was on the Marae, which is beautiful. All the trappings that you'd expect. I think we have a dinner at the end of it, which is nice, but I still think the field days are the most beautiful part of it. You see the real, genuine Maori outcoming. Beautiful. It's just lovely. So the next one was actually to the proprietors of Tawapata South, which is on Mahia Peninsula. And it's a beautiful spot, actually gorgeous. I've been past Mahia before, but never gone out to the peninsula before. And this farm takes you right out to the tip of Mahia. And at the tip of Mahia is Sir Peter Beck's launch pad for Rocket Lab. And the launch man, that launches the rockets, is a young Māori boy whose parents were actually born in Mahia. He's come back with all his degrees in astrophysics and science, and he is now the person that actually launches those rockets from Mahia.
That is amazing.
Isn't it wonderful?
And fantastic.
So that was an amazing trip. And the man that runs it, the chair of that, is a guy called Lester White. Actually, he lives in Australia, believe it or not. But again, it's a beautiful property. It's a big one. It's bigger than the other one. They've got something like 15,000 stock units on it. So it's a big mix of cattle and sheep. We did on a farm tour and we went on side by side farm vehicles and ATVs and went around it. It was easy to go around. Some of the roads are sealed because I think Rocket Lab has done some good work for them in that sense. And there were 350 people there. There were 300 over 200 at Whangaruru, which is great, but 350 they had at Mahia, which is a big number when you think about
it. That's a lot of people, yeah.
There were 98 farm vehicles on the track that day, nearly 100 vehicles going around the thing. A snake of vehicles going around this property and seeing what was there. Get right down to the coast, and they fenced the coast off. They fenced the beach off as well so the cattle don't get into the sea. They've done an incredible job and a real credit to them. So my comment would be that, we often see what I call state highway farms. We drive up the central North Island, we see dairy farms all the way over the old sheep one. But to go out to places like Mahia and to go to Whangaruru was one of the highlights of my life. And I think I'm very privileged to be able to do that and see what great jobs people do. And people don't understand the Maori economy. I mean, 10% of our meat, 15% of our meat comes off Maori farms. It's big. They're not small.
No.
They're large scale, and especially in those areas up on Tarawhiti and in these areas, particularly where they're based. I suppose I'll end it there by saying, it's not rocket science to say Maori are pretty good. I mean, that's a terrible line, isn't it?
Well, you had to have
forgive me for being stupid.
Some sort of rocket joke in there.
Had to be, yeah.
Yeah.
So just to remind them, we've got the final of that. The winner of that competition will be announced in about 6 weeks' time in Palmerston North at a gala dinner where we'll just get probably just over 800 people there.
Fantastic. Well, that's great. Thanks so much for that update. And people, get your wool carpet.
Yeah.
Thanks, Peter.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.org.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.